Hey, this is Danny O'Neill from the Danny Dave and Moore Show. Thank you for listening to the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I'd really appreciate it if you checked out Danny Dave and Moore every afternoon from 3 to 7. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
This is Bob Gross and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Welcome, everybody. It is Bob Gross and Tom. We are live at the VMAC as Seahawks rookie minicamp is happening out here. The rookies are out here taking questions. They'll go through walkthroughs, do all that kind of good stuff, and we will be talking about that, talking to one of the rookies. Their sixth-round pick linebacker out of Temple, Jake Martin, will join us on the program. So stay tuned for that. That's coming up any minute, actually. They'll come busting through the doors here any minute. We had a chance to speak with Alex McGoo, who was their seventh-round pick, their last pick. Jake was their second to the last pick. So we're working our way from the bottom up. So by the time we're all done, we'll talk with Rashad Penny.
By the end of the year?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they only had a handful of picks.
We like to go in reverse order is how we're doing this here.
Is this the well, there's a million ways you could look at this, but is today the official start to the season, at least as far as the players are concerned?
No, because the veterans aren't here.
Yeah, but there's some players here. I mean, these guys are on the team, aren't they?
For these guys, yeah. It is. For the veterans, it is not.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would say.
I mean, you could say the draft is the start of the year. You could say free agency is the start of the year.
Well, technically, in that case, the year never ends.
Well,
that's what they're going for.
Fair. Yeah, that's what.
And that makes Gross really happy.
I still think it's too much.
I think
lonely voice in the wilderness.
Gross wants more events.
I think the NFL is over. Overexposed.
Oversaturated.
Although there's no evidence to back that up.
No, just here.
They had the NFL draft on three networks. It drew a combined like 8-9 ratings, something like that, as good
ridiculous.
As NBA Finals, things like that. So there's really no evidence that it's oversaturated. I just think that it is.
Do you think that the fans look at it that way? Because in our business, I think you're right. We're talking about it every opportunity that we can take, right? Mm-hmm. If there's even a blip of news, we're going to go after that. We're going
right.
to not blow it up into something huge. We're going to talk about it. We're going to exhaust it. I wonder if fans look at that the same way. Because I was trying to tell you the other day, the draft is kind of isolated on the calendar. From a fan perspective who doesn't follow this stuff every single day, I think that they're probably okay with the way things are.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think it's market-related, too.
Yeah, sure.
In other words, I don't think it was this prominent here when the Sonics were in town. You know, they'd normally be in the NBA playoffs right now, and you know, you were certainly paying attention to stuff. But when the Sonics left at almost the same time, the NFL, in my opinion, took a stratospheric leap.
In Seattle.
In general. I think in a lot of places, too. I remember there being a story around that time, around 10 years ago or so, where for the first time ever, a Monday Night Football broadcast had beaten a Yankee playoff game in New York.
Mm.
And it was like, wow. I mean, that's a sign of how ascendant the NFL is.
Yeah.
And so I think it's happened everywhere, and I think it's been more pronounced here, again, because of the lack of a winter sport for not a decade.
And just the fact that the team has been very good around
that
here.
That also is certainly a big factor. It's been the greatest stretch of Seahawks football in their history.
Yeah, if they were mediocre, I don't think that would be the case as much.
I don't think hardcore fans can get enough. I think their appetite for the NFL is insatiable.
The hardcore is definitely.
Yeah, I think they're going to be of the mind, bring it on. Let's talk about the combine. Let's talk about the draft. Let's get into minicamp. Let's see who's there. Let's see. I think they'd live and die with every part of it.
But the wild popularity of it is somewhat of a new phenomenon. It's somewhat of a new phenomenon. And even here, I mean, the point being, when the Seahawks first moved into their new stadium, they didn't sell out.
Right.
Can you imagine? That was the start of this millennium. So it wasn't like it was 35 years ago or anything like that. In 2001, 2002, the Seahawks did not sell out their games. That's impossible to imagine now.
Yeah, a couple of years into Holmgren there, they had made the playoffs, I think, once before the stadium opened. And then it didn't take long for them to get good, though.
No.
I mean, they were good almost immediately when the stadium opened.
Yeah,
they're in the Super Bowl within
3 years,
5 years.
Yeah, right.
I'm probably on the other side of you guys that I love all these events. Now, I'm not going to watch every day of the Combine. I did watch a good chunk of it, you know. I love the draft. I really get into all these things. So I might be in the majority of the fans, maybe media, I get the burnout factor. It is constant. It is going on. By the way, a bit of Seahawks news. The Seahawks officially have released slash failed a physical for Cliff Averill. So he's
not a surprise.
They thanked him. Yeah, it's what we expected.
Just didn't know exactly how it would play out.
Yeah, and he was actually Pete Carroll on with Brock and Salk this morning. Write that down. They were asking about updates on Cam Chancellor and Cliff Averill. He kind of said, well, you know, June might be when we're going to get information on that. I'm paraphrasing, but he was talking about June being sort of a time to determine that. But
so he lied.
I guess. I don't know why it came out today as opposed to...
unless that's part of just procedures. That you're doing physicals for guys now, I'm not sure, but not a surprise. Like Ichiro retiring, not a surprise.
I was going to say, it's strange that in consecutive days, and I don't know, would you call Cliff Averill a Seahawk legend at this point? Not to the same extent that Ichiro is, but
no.
Key part of a Super Bowl team.
I think their greatest era.
I think everyone who played on the Super Bowl winning Seahawks, has got a special place.
That's very true. They don't have to pay for a meal.
He's part of their greatest era.
Yep.
And a big
significant chunk of it.
Yeah, he wasn't just a guy occupying a spot. He was a huge contributor, and I maintain he's one of the best free agent signings they've ever had.
Sure.
And in consecutive days, they're both no longer with the team, and we'll see what happens with Cliff Averill.
He's still going to wear a uniform. He's just not going to play.
He's still going to practice.
Yeah. Still going to practice. Speaking of that.
Yeah, that was weird.
Speaking of that, I was at the Mariner game last night, and I went to the clubhouse afterwards, and there were a ton of Japanese media in there, but Ichiro was not to be found. So I don't know if he showed up way late. At some point, I was just like, all right, I got to get out of here.
Well, Jerry told him not to do anything different.
He did his thing at 3:30.
They were all in there waiting.
They're probably here anticipating the arrival of Mr. Ohtani as well.
Waiting in the Mariners clubhouse?
Well, I mean, they're covering the game, so they're coming in a day early, obviously.
They figure while we're here, we'll go and see if Ichiro's around. But
yeah, I mean, that was going to be a big story.
Yeah.
Ichiro facing Ohtani.
Well, we don't know that it necessarily would have happened. He would have had to have been in the lineup or pinch hitting, obviously, for that.
Right, but I mean, it could have happened.
Sure, absolutely.
And then now the photo ops can still happen and things like that.
We still don't have any real sense of how they're going to use him in the series, right? He's expected to pitch
I think he's going to start Sunday.
But in terms of him batting?
He made DH, although I don't know about that. I think that he's going to get a response, like I was saying it to Clayton before we went on the air on John Clayton's show, that... I think they're going to boo him.
I think he's going to boo Ohtani.
I'm not going to go as far as say it's going to be Alex Rodriguez-esque, but it's going to be irrational, and I think it's going to be significant.
You think it's going to be irrational? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Because there's no real reason to boo him unless you think he just spurned the Mariners.
Well, that's it. I mean, it feels like he did.
Well, there's people like you and Salk that believe he had his mind made up the whole time.
Right.
Yeah. I don't personally buy that.
That's just a gut feeling, by the way. It's not based on anything other than piecing together different comments from...
You can come up with a perception if you want, and I think a lot of people want to, that he led everyone else on. If you agree with you and Mike that he already had his mind made up, well, then he led everyone else on. And the Mariners went out of their way to try and make an effort and sold out for him and he rejected Seattle, and you reject Seattle at your peril. Alex Rodriguez made the cardinal sin of accepting $90 million more in a much bigger offer and was booed irrationally, mercilessly for decades because of it.
So silly.
I would boo him. I don't know that I agree with you that the fans will boo him, because I think most of them are probably with Bob more. They're just interested in seeing what this guy can do.
I bet they'll boo because of the other story that we talked about a couple weeks ago, that he likes silence.
Oh, yeah.
I think there'll be some extra noise because of that becoming a bit of a big story where somebody in the dugout asks the fans to be quiet.
I think he gets booed. I mean, it doesn't change the fact that you're going to get a chance to see him, and I think there's going to be a big crowd there and everything like that. But they're going to let him have it.
Is it going to be a large en masse boo? Or is it going to be like a large groan?
It probably won't be as in mass as, like I said, it
like
was
A-Rod
for Alex.
Or something like that.
Which was unbelievable.
If A-Rod's a 10, this would be like a 5.
People brought paper money.
Yeah, the guy with the fishing pole. Do you remember the guy with the fishing pole?
Yeah, it was
paper money attached to it.
It was intense. It's not going to be that bad.
It was silly. It was absolutely silly. But we are out here at the VMAC. The rookies are out here, and we get a chance to speak to one of them right now. He sits down with us. I'm talking about sixth-round pick out of Temple. Linebacker Jake Martin is here. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing really well. Are you? How you feel? Is this like the first day of school? Are you nervous? Are you excited? Take us through what you're feeling right now.
It most definitely feels like the first day of school. You know, yesterday was a little get-to-know-you time type of thing where you get your physicals and stuff like that and go through meeting with staff and a quick install, but today we got to get on the field, and, you know, it's more of a up-tempo pace, like a first day of training camp, first day type of thing. We're doing a lot of walkthroughs and run-throughs and things like that, get the legs warmed, get a nice little ladder going. So it's great to be out there and playing football again, you know, after not playing since December or early January. So it's great to have everyone out there running around, so it feels good.
Tell us what draft day was like for you.
Oh, man. Draft day was crazy. You know, it was probably one of the most stressful and anxiety-filled times that you go through. You know, you're sitting there waiting for the phone call, you know, hoping you get a call. And
what did your agents telling you that you could expect? They give you any idea of what was going to happen? Or
to be honest with you, they always say that they have an idea, but no one really knows.
No
one really knows. You're texting back, you're talking to people on the phone, you know, teams are calling you, and you're texting your agent and trying to keep your agent in the loop of what teams are telling you, what teams have called you. They always give you like a packet of what to do and what to say and what not to say.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So,
wait, am I supposed to say this or not say
exactly
this?
Exactly. So you don't really know what's going on. Like on draft day, you know, I hadn't had much contact after my top 30 visit here. You know, I hope I left a obviously I left a great impression here with Pete Carroll and staff, and you know, I ended up in the spot where I really wanted to be. You know, I've always wanted to live in Seattle, and it's a great organization. It's a great program, you know, coming from an elite defense at Temple University to another elite defense in the NFL. So it was a great opportunity for me to be in a place where my college values of it's all about the ball, to come to a place where it's all about the ball. You know, it's about the Legion of Boom, and at Temple is about the dark side, you know. So it was an awesome transition.
What do you mean by that, it's all about the dark side?
So
that's her name.
At Temple, our defense is called the Dark Side.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So
is that something everybody knows?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're alone.
About Temple football?
You
yes.
Know,
everybody
you
knows.
You don't
this?
Know your Temple yeah. football.
Nass, did you
clearly.
Know that?
If,
no, you.
If you don't know the Dark Side, you don't know football.
All right. Did you say you always wanted to come to Seattle?
Yeah, I've always wanted to live here. I don't know why.
Really?
I've never been this far north and this far west.
Where'd you grow up?
I'm from Houston originally, but I grew up, did a lot of my living in Colorado.
Okay.
So I've been all over the place, and I got a chance to go to California, but I've never been in, like, the Oregon or Seattle area. So this is awesome for me. I mean, I've never been around this much water.
you're practicing right on the water,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, yeah, it's amazing.
By the way, you got here just in time because the rain is just sort of starting to taper off.
Nice.
After about October, it's going to be pretty – you'll see a lot of water then.
Okay.
Yeah, but you'll be busy.
Yeah, hope so.
Yeah, so it, just in terms of the Seahawks team, is this a team that you followed as a collegiate athlete? Who's your favorite team?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think what's hard about playing football, you know, in college and in high school, and you know, honestly, loving the game and loving the sport. I really don't really have a favorite team. You know, I followed players throughout the league, you know.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of people, when they watch football, they watch the ball. But really, I'm looking at what position I play and what they do. So I would say I follow players.
Okay. So who'd you follow? Who are guys you modeled your game after, if you could?
I would say Khalil Mack, Tom Bali, Justin Houston, J.J. Watt, guys like that. And try to pick up the best parts of their game and try to mold myself into them.
All right. Tell us the story of how you wound up being a linebacker. I'm guessing you didn't start at linebacker, or did you when you were 7 years old?
No, I didn't. I actually started off at running back, but I think everyone starts at running back.
I think so, too.
Even offensive linemen were like, yeah, I was a quarterback, I was a running back.
Right, so I started off at running back. I started playing football in my freshman year of high school.
Okay. Oh, you didn't start till then?
Yeah. You know, my parents knew that we all wanted to play football, but they wanted us to experience all kinds of different sports, whether that was martial arts, gymnastics, soccer, baseball. You know, they wanted us to play it all before we made the decision, even though they knew that we were going to pick football. So I appreciate that, to get around different sports and become an athlete. Yeah, but I started playing running back and linebacker my freshman year of high school. And then I quickly learned that they moved me to D-end. They moved me to D-end my freshman year. Yeah, I say going into my sophomore year, they moved me to D-end.
Mm-hmm.
I played a lot of D-end and tight end.
Okay.
And then my senior year, I played anywhere they needed me, whether that was three tech, nose, DN, or Mike, linebacker.
Were you in Denver?
Yeah, I was right outside Denver in Aurora.
Okay. Oh, Aurora is where my family's from.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to Cherokee Trail High School.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. So you played DN, and then so that's sort of a natural then transition up to standing up and playing linebacker a little bit.
Yeah,
right?
And at Temple, you know, playing the rush, we played at a 2-point and 3-point. You know, we're dropping the coverage, we're taking the running back out of the backfield, we're covering wheels. You know, we're in coverage, we're up over standing up over two, rerouting two, buzzing under one. You know, so that part of my game is natural, and that knowledge I understand and understand that language and feel comfortable moving out there. So.
What's your interaction with Pete Carroll been like so far? Your thoughts about him?
He's a great guy, you know. Coach Rule, while I was at Temple, you know, we modeled a lot of the things we did after how Pete Carroll did his thing at USC, you know, following a process, you know, and understanding that the numbers of football, you know, if you don't have this many turnovers, you know, if we hold the team under 17 points, we'll go 18-2, you know, or we know that it's about we play about the ball and having leverage on the ball, and that's a part of the game that Coach Collins and Coach Rule both shared, you know. And Coach Collins obviously understands the numbers of we hold the team under this many points, we allow this team to run under 100 yards, we'll win the game. You know, we have 40 sacks in the season, 42 sacks in the season. We're putting ourselves in not just bowl game play, but we're putting ourselves in the conference championship play. So those type of numbers are what I really like about playing here in Seattle. You know, and Coach Carroll and you know, our interaction, you can tell they do things here, you know, so they bring a lot of energy, a lot of juice to everything they do, and I love that. So it's been great. I'd like to sit down and talk to him a little bit more outside of the team setting. So.
Yeah.
Speaking with Seahawks sixth-round pick Jake Martin sitting down with us for a few more moments here with Bob Gross and Tom. You say you were training in martial arts. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, I did.
Really? What did you train? See, he's speaking my language now. What did you train in?
I did Kung Fu and Wushu.
Okay. You still practice it today or no?
Nah.
Okay.
I might be able to remember the white belt form, but other than that,
okay.
Other than that, it's pretty much it.
You throw a couple of hip tosses here and get, you know. Hey, as far as how you, and I know it's very early, you're just here a couple of days, but do you have a sense of how you fit in here or what your role may be going in, or how is that still yet to be determined?
To be honest with you, I don't know right now. Probably as the day goes on and we get this real practice in, you know, that we had a walkthrough just now. Excuse me. we try to walk through just now, and wherever they need me to play, whether that's Leo, that's outside linebacker, you know, I'll do anything.
Where are you most comfortable?
I'd say Leo is most like playing rush at Temple. You know, it's the same thing. You're in a 2-point, a 3-point, you know, you're mirror stepping the tight end and you're dropping into coverage, so mm-hmm. or pass rushing. So I like that part of the game.
How'd you wind up at Temple?
I wasn't a very sought after guy in high school. You know, I had maybe five or six D1 offers. You know, and at CSU and CU and Wyoming and New Mexico State and San Jose State, North Texas, and I think that's pretty much it. You know, and
so all in the Midwest, all in the West, and then all of a sudden the school from the East calls.
Well, my brother Josh at the time was playing at Kansas City, and I told him that I really didn't. Like enjoy into the business I had taken, you know, and I wanted some more opportunities to look somewhere else. And he went to Columbia, and that's in the middle of the city. And I really, when I got a chance to go out there and visit, I really enjoyed living on the East Coast. That's something like that I had never seen before, you know, from coming from the South and being in Colorado and the Mountain West. You know, it's very like cookie cutter, very suburban, very golf cutter, like golf course and the same cookie cutter houses in the neighborhood. So I want a little change of pace in life and change of experience, and I think that helped me grow as a person and as a football player. So then he talked to Mark DeLeon, who was a GA there at Temple, I think under Al Golden, 06. Mm-hmm. And Coach Rule obviously took the head coaching job, and he knew Mark, and then Mark gave my film to Coach Rule and his dad. His dad was at, I think, UConn at the time, maybe. And then Temple and UCF called, and Temple asked if I want to come out and take a visit. So I went out to take a visit, and I loved Philly. Got off the plane, and I loved it. So I don't regret that decision ever.
Would you have minded if the Eagles had drafted you? Would you have minded playing in front of Philly fans for the rest of your life?
Not at all. Philly was good to me, man. Philly was good to me. And it was a crazy time to be in Philly with all their sports teams are playing well.
Yeah, so. Villanova just won.
Yeah, how about being in town with a Super Bowl winner?
I wasn't there.
Oh, you left?
Yeah, I was training for – for all of this, you know, for pro day and combine type stuff and stuff like that. So I was in Colorado training, you know, but I saw the Snapchats and the Instagram stories of and pictures and stuff like that. So that was cool, man. I wish I could have been there, but I'm happy I wasn't there, though. So,
hey, did you pay much attention to the breakdowns of you before the draft? You know, everybody, all the analysts give the strengths and weaknesses of everybody. Mm-hmm. He does this well. He needs to work on this. And then you get the post-draft grades where people say, hey, Jake Martin, great pick. Or there might be a guy going, what were they doing drafting Jake Martin? Mm-hmm. Do you get into that at all? Do you read any of that stuff pre-draft, post-draft?
Not really. You know, I wasn't a big fan of looking at mock drafts either. You know, to be honest with you, no one can predict where you're going to go. No one can.
Yeah, there was a surprise with a number one overall pick.
Yeah. you can always have an, obviously you can have an idea. But you never know what GM and what head coach is going to pull the trigger on you. You know, you don't know when you're going to go. You can have an honest idea, but, I didn't really pay any mind to that. You know, all I need was an opportunity. And that's what I kept telling myself. All I need is an opportunity, you know, and I know I'm good enough. I'm good enough to play in this league and it's a blessing that I'm here. So,
well, welcome to Seattle, man.
Have you done a lot of radio interviews before? This sounds completely natural.
Yeah, you're really good at it, man.
I did major in broadcast journalism.
There we go.
Yeah.
Well, you got a good energy, man.
Thank you.
And welcome to Seattle. We look forward to seeing you out there, and hopefully we're talking again soon.
For sure.
Congratulations, man.
There he is, Jake Martin, Seahawks draft pick, sixth rounder out of Temple University. Part of the dark side, Tom. Part of the dark
what?
Side. The dark side.
You guys really knew that?
No.
I'd actually heard it before, but I wasn't really sure what it was a reference to.
Because he was saying how Pete Carroll likes to go after the ball. We know that specifically. But he said that's kind of the opposite from the dark side. I said, well, what the heck is that?
I didn't even know it was Temple.
You know what the dark side is?
It's like the dark side of the force?
It's a good nick.
It's a good nick.
You see, he had the bracelet that said dark side on it.
I did.
Oh.
Yeah, I'd heard of the term. I didn't know it was Temple, though.
Okay. So you just made me look like an idiot on purpose.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's fine.
That's pretty much
from
it.
From Aurora, that's a nice
man,
part of Denver.
He's got some energy. He's going to be a Pete Carroll guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's big. Reminds me of when we first talked to KJ Wright.
Yeah, he's only listed at 6'2", 236.
He seemed bigger than that, didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah. I'm looking at his he may be bigger, but yeah.
Big paws, too.
Yeah, well, anybody over 5'9 looks big to me. I'm looking straight up at him.
Wow, 5'11, you're towering.
This guy's a monster.
This guy's a mountain of a man. No, good energy, though.
Wish him luck.
Yeah, he's you know, I'll be curious to see how they, I would imagine he's going to be a special teams guy. He's a depth guy.
That's his chance to make the team starts there.
Yeah, for a lot of these guys, it starts on special teams.
Most definitely.
Yeah, they're pretty good at linebacker here.
Yeah, they got a couple of guys, but they need depth. You know, you got your guys that you count on, but their depth is, I think, across the defense has been hit a bit. So that's part of this whole thing is restocking that. So good to catch up with him, and we'll talk more about what's going on out here as the rookies are in town. Some will be up there at the podium answering questions. I think Shaquem Griffin's going to be up there as well. So maybe we'll get some of that sound coming up. Meanwhile, does Earl want to be here or not? John Schneider had some interesting comments on that. I don't know how many people knew. He was on with us yesterday. We had a chance to catch up with him. So we'll kind of go back and revisit some of the things he had to say next with Bob Grosenthal.
You're listening to Bob Grosenthal.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Bob Gross and Tom. We are live at the VMAC. Our thanks to Jake Martin, sixth-round pick of your Seattle Seahawks, who joined us in the previous segment. If you missed that, we're going to replay that for you in the 2 o'clock hour. He's really good, very engaging, very, very energetic.
Yeah, future radio host.
Yeah, very energetic guy, so really likable. We'll play that for you again in case you missed it. What were you going
to
say?
I'm trying to picture what a conversation between he and Pete Carroll might sound like, because he said he wanted to go in and talk to him.
Oh, my goodness.
It's going to be really fast.
You can just keep the coffee and energy drinks away from both of them. Just slow them down. Imagine having to transcribe that conversation.
No, not possible.
Danny O'Neill, our Seahawks insider, will join us at 1 o'clock. Talk some more Seahawks with him. But we had a chance to speak with the GM of your Seattle Seahawks, John Schneider, joined us yesterday. We hit on a bunch of different things. But what seemed to catch everybody around the country, as a matter of fact, is his comments on Earl Thomas, cut number 4, Ashley, and the question is, does Earl really want to be here?
We heard you guys say pretty definitively after the draft that Earl Thomas is going to be a Seahawk, but through your communication with him and his reps, what's just the general sense you get from him about whether or not he wants to be here.
My sense is that he wants to be here. I haven't got that sense from his agents at all.
Okay, because the last thing we heard from him was at the Pro Bowl, where he said, "I don't see myself going out on the field without a deal. I know me." And yeah, Earl's a little impulsive when he speaks, maybe he's changed his tune. But when you hear that, I would imagine that gives you some cause for concern, right?
I met with his agents after that, like we do with all of our players' agents at the combine, and I expressed my questions or concerns about that, and they didn't tell me that it was any different than we had thought, that he wants to be a Seahawk.
Guarded. That was my takeaway on that, listening to him for the second time.
Yeah, it's
a guarded response.
Those are one of those questions you have to ask, but you're not going to get the truth if it's something other than what he said.
No. Well, you're not going to get the truth no matter what.
Well, but, I mean, if that's the truth, he'd give you the truth, right? If what he said is the truth, he's going to give you the good news. If Earl behind the scenes is saying, "I don't want to be here, get me out of here," he's not telling us that.
No.
So
you're not negotiating in public. If you're John Schneider.
Right. So it's one we have to ask, but you sort of understand it's a conditional response.
I wonder what he thinks, and there's a million different questions we could have asked him about this. We were going to spend 20 minutes talking to Earl Thomas. I wonder what he thought when he actually heard Earl at the Pro Bowl saying, I'm not going to play without a contract or whatever. I mean,
says he reached out to his agent after hearing that. He was a little concerned.
Well, I mean, did he say he was concerned, though?
Yeah, that's what he said in the cut.
That was the actual word he used there?
That was the word.
Okay, I must have missed that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, the fact of the matter is, regardless of what has been said or hasn't been said, none of this will know for sure until, and I guess I'm not going to count mini camps, until training camp starts. Right? I mean, mini camps, if he shows up for them, there's no guarantee for training camp. We've seen it played out that way before. That was Cam Chancellor's move, was it not?
Yep.
To show up at the mini camps and not show up to training camp. So until he's there for training camp, there'll always be an element of doubt. Unless he publicly says, "I am absolutely locked in," and makes it crystal clear that he's not going to do anything. You got to go by the words that he's said. And the words that he said on the subject are, he can't see playing without a contract extension.
Yeah. It's the last thing we've heard from him.
Yeah.
So you're right. We'll have to wait and see. But he's also a guy that, even if he's out there playing on the final year of his deal, as we've talked about, there's no part of me that believes he's going to be anything less than absolutely just on fire to play football.
Well,
he's got a lot of things on the line, first of all. Second of all, he's just a guy that's got a passion for the game, unlike most players you speak to. I mean, he's a different level when it comes to that.
Well, and a contract year, you alluded to that. I mean, he just would be cutting his own throat if he didn't play well in his final year, if he viewed it as his final year. So there's no way that that's a concern. The only concern from him from a playing standpoint is health now becoming an issue for him? Has he taken too many shots over the years?
Well, we'll see.
I don't know that we would know that immediately, though. Do you think? I mean, he had a...
If he just looked slower, if he looked...
No,
hesitant,
I feel like outside of that.
Right, but we said that same thing about him at the beginning of... Was it last year or the year before? That he looked a little slower, like he was missing tackles and he wasn't catching guys. But that didn't really turn out to be the case.
No, we won't know unless he gets hurt.
Sure.
I mean, the issue with him is not how he plays, if he plays hard or anything like that, or plays well. It's, can he play 16 games still? In my view, I mean, that's the only issue from the Seahawks standpoint. Mm-hmm. And, I still think the Seahawks, boy, they've really gotten, I think from their standpoint, I don't know if burned is the right word. I've heard people use that word, but it has not been to their benefit to sign guys to a third contract. So they may have already made up their minds.
That they're just not going to.
Right.
How many guys have they signed to a third contract? Cam?
Cam, Bennett. And was Cliff Averill signed to a third contract?
I don't remember if he was twice. Or...
I think he would have been three if Bennett was three, because they came in the same year, did they not?
You know what, though? If you're going to do it, if all those guys had come in at the exact same time, you would do it with Earl.
Well, I knew you were going to say that. I mean, he'd be the one guy you definitely would do it with.
And I guess they did it with Marshawn to an extent, right?
That's right. Marshawn they did for sure.
And that one certainly did not work out.
I don't think because it doesn't work out with one or two guys, it doesn't mean you never revisit it, because it is going to depend on the player.
Well, but it hasn't worked out yet.
True. No,
but you're right. You definitely got to go by the player, and I agree with you 1,000%. I heard Dave Wyman say the same thing on Danny, Dave, and Moore, that Earl is the guy that if you were going to sign a third contract for, it would have been first in the list. If you were evaluating everyone in the same pool, he would have been the automatic choice.
You'd do it for Russell Wilson, down the line.
Well, that's
if he's still playing at a high level. I mean, the quarterback is that much more essential, obviously.
Of course.
But you would definitely think about it.
Although I read an interesting thing on some site, I think it was Bleacher Report today or something like that, that suggested that the Seahawks may go Kirk Cousins on Russell Wilson.
With franchise tags?
Franchise tags.
Oh, I thought you meant give him a fully guaranteed contract.
No. Well, a franchise tag is a fully guaranteed contract.
For that year.
Well, for, yeah.
For that
but
year.
But if they did 3 years, it'd be 138 or 144. The third year of the deal, yeah. when it would be included 40%, would be $54 million.
And somehow somebody would come up and say, it's insulting.
Yeah, right.
It's insulting.
I'll retire before I do that.
Let's play another cut from John, our conversation with him yesterday. Cut number five, we asked him about the guy that was the biggest story, not of the Seahawks draft, of the entire NFL draft, and that was Shaquem Griffin.
I mean, the guy ran a 4.36, had a phenomenal workout, you know. So I think it's all about people saying, where are you going to play him? And so for us, you know, as a Will linebacker, and then the thing that stands out about him is his pass rush. I mean, he has a unique ability to bend and you know, work his way back to the quarterback off the edge. So, and obviously great instincts, plays super hard. So I think it was maybe just more, you know, how's he going to be able to take on blocks, right? How's he going to be able to play at the point of attack? And then everybody had to figure that out along the way. And you have to just really, in this instance, you just have to, you know, trust your gut and trust what you're seeing on film. You know, he's a guy that, you know, at the important times in games, he really steps up and he makes the big plays. You know, I think you can question it, and, you know, are there times you can see him, you know, fall off tackles? Yeah, absolutely. But you can do that with every linebacker.
There you go. There's John Schneider on Shaquem Griffin, and everybody anxious to see how he's going to fit in and what kind of a player he ultimately can become here. You couldn't have a bigger base of people rooting for him. You know,
most hyped fifth round pick ever.
Yeah,
I would
say,
agree with that. Yeah,
how much
doubt
is there as to whether or not he's even going to make the team?
There's some. I mean, he's a fifth round draft pick. I mean, let's be honest. You know, they're not going to. We've all agreed that they're not going to just take him to take him.
No.
He's not going to make the team just because they want him to make the team.
Right.
He's going to have to earn his spot, but I would put him in the category of any fifth-round pick. That, you know, I mean, he certainly has got a shot, and special teams would be important. I think like, my experience in watching him was, I've mentioned it many times, that bowl game, and he was such a good player in that game, against such good competition, that I just walked away thinking this is a good football player.
Yeah, he'll have fans rooting for him around the league.
No
fans of
about
other
it.
Teams will be rooting for him to at least make it. Now, when he becomes the competitor, they'll root against him. But I think as a whole, the NFL fan base is rooting for Shaquem Griffin.
Definitely.
Let's give you your pitching matchup brought to you by Heritage Distilling's BSB Brown Sugar Bourbon. Tonight's matchup is?
That would be Garrett Richards for the Angels against Mike Leake for the Seattle Mariners. Garrett Richards has started 6 games this year. That's the number of games he's pitched in each of the last 2 years.
Wow.
6-6, and then 6 this year.
And he was their ace 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So he's due for a beating tonight. I told you Manaea was due.
Yeah.
How is it that Paxton strikes out 16 guys, they can't win that game, but LeBlanc goes out and they win that one last
He goes four game. Innings
goes four.
And they win.
It's baseball,
but they take
against
out.
Against Manaea.
Yeah, against Manaea. He's due. That's just baseball, Tom.
Insane.
Ask Lloyd. He'll tell you. That's baseball.
Where is Lloyd these days?
He's on what staff is he on?
I thought he was on Detroit staff again, but I'm not sure about
that. I can't
that.
Remember. All right. Well, hey, the least likely Hall of Famer you could possibly imagine might actually get there. We'll tell you why. Wait a minute. What? Coming up with Bob Gross and Tom.
It's Bob Gross and Tom.
Hold up. Hey, wait a minute.
What?
Wait a minute.
It is Wait a Minute What here with Bob Gross and Tom. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll be joined by our Seahawks insider, Danny O'Neill of Danny Dave and More fame. I think most people are familiar with that. But we'll dazzle you with some stories here, and one of them that was pretty interesting. You gave me this article this morning, Tom, about a player who I've always thought is a very good player, right? When he was with the Orioles, now he's with the Braves. Cannon arm in the outfield. just a nice, solid player who's always available. Nick Markakis.
Mm-hmm. Has he ever been brought up on our show for any reason before? I don't think so.
Probably when he's played the Mariners and he's thrown somebody out. Or,
maybe.
You know, when he was with the Orioles.
I don't think so. I think Tom's right. I think he's been anonymous.
I don't know if we've ever mentioned him specifically, but that's kind of the point of this whole story.
He's a guy that, based on his pace right now and his age, that could come up with it. He's got 2,092 hits right now.
And he's 34.
And he's having a heck of a season, hitting .336 with a .429 on-base percentage so far this year and five home runs. But he's a guy that they say, based on his pace in this article, that he could be a 3,000-hit guy, which has been, as they point out, the automatic entry into the Hall of Fame with the one notable exception of Rafael Palmeiro for different reasons.
Or Pete Rose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Markakis is a Hall of Famer. Not a guy. He's always a guy I looked at as like, man, I wouldn't mind having him on my team. He's a really good outfielder.
Well, if he makes the Hall of Fame, I mean, if he gets the 3,000 hits, you're talking about having a couple of .330 seasons here in his late 30s.
He's going to get much better in his late 30s. I think
I just don't see it happening.
I think he needs to get.
But if it happens, he'll definitely make the Hall of Fame.
If he needs about, 900 hits to get there? If he gets 160 over about the next 7 seasons or so, he's going to get there. So he'd need to play into his 40s, basically, to do it. And he'd need to play at essentially an all-star clip. I don't know how many times he's actually been an all-star. I think maybe once. But does that...
He's a pretty steady... You look at his hit numbers each season, and he's pretty durable, with the exception of 2012. He had a wrist injury, so he only played 104 games. But you just look at his hit totals every year, 191, 182, 188, 187, 182. Then that injury year, 125. 172, 177, 181, 163, 160. So he's kind of always in that range. He's a remarkably consistent player.
Yeah, I mean, Biggio's in the Hall of Fame. There's some debate about that. I'm not really sure where I stand.
You get the 3,000, you're in.
I've always thought that, too. 3,000 hits is a ton of hits.
If he gets the 3,000 hits, he's in.
Can you imagine him standing at the podium? Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Nick Markakis. I mean, it just doesn't that feel right.
You'll have a different feeling about him then than you do now, though.
Why do you hate him?
I don't know anything about him.
He's going to have to notch 6 or 7 more really good seasons.
Of 160 hits apiece?
Yes. I mean, that's
160 times 6 is...
We're going to do math again, really?
960.
We're going for math again?
Yeah, it's 960. So, I mean, he'll get there with that. About 6 more pretty good seasons. It's just an odd concept to me.
I don't think you're going to have to worry about it.
I'm not worried. It's just odd.
Tom's up at night. This can't happen.
It is unique, though. It was a surprise to hear that number.
Yeah. Weird. Anyway.
All right.
Can we talk about Drake and his profanity?
Foul-mouth Drake. report, NBA tells Drake to stop cussing at the game.
Isn't Drake known, and I'm going to be way off on this.
Danny's the one to talk to about Drake.
Right. Isn't he known as...
Soft.
Yeah, like he's more clean or his lyrics explicit?
I don't know if his lyrics are. I think he's just thought of individually as soft, is how Danny portrays him. I don't listen to him, so I don't really know. But in the rap world, according to Danny, he's thought of as tissue paper soft.
Okay. But he's like Canada's number one Raptors fan, right?
He's very present.
Raptors fan.
Yeah, he's courtside. He's very invested in him. And
just got dissed by Rihanna.
Did he?
What did she do? What'd she say to him?
That she's, you know, we're no longer an item. If they ever really were.
Well, that's hard.
Apparently, he was cursing at Kendrick Perkins.
That's why he was upset.
Yeah, there was a video I was watching. You can't understand anything anybody's saying. But on their way off the court, Perkins and him were definitely going back and forth.
And that's very safe. As I said, he was surrounded by approximately 500 security guards.
Yeah, he was. Is he the new Spike Lee? Is that what his role is?
I wouldn't go that far.
This is Deadspin. Yeah, because I said it was one of those fake NBA fights where both guys talk smack over each other's heads and yell, "Hold me back! Hold me back!"
Yeah, the security was just a bunch of guys standing around watching the thing unfold, from what I could tell.
So the NBA has kindly asked the musician to stop with the cuss words, is what the story reads. Per ESPN, he was warned over his use of bad language. And they talked to the, apparently they even talked to the Raptors GM about it.
What's he supposed to do?
Well,
Are they buddies with him?
Well, they might be the ones getting him tickets.
Even money, they are, yeah.
So, yeah, so tell your super fan to pipe down over there.
And you know how I feel about profanity.
Yeah.
I got no respect for it.
You're very lazy. Very disturbed.
It is lazy, except when you really need it, like last night.
Except for when Tom needs it.
I was texting Bob and Groz last night. I was not happy about one particular issue. I used some colorful
metaphors.
Yeah. Telling you, it adds flavor to stories. It's perfect. Meanwhile, story number three, the police have released photos and details from Johnny Manziel's domestic violence arrest. So TMZ put the photos out there. I couldn't figure out what they were doing with the camera, and I saw some of the comments were actually kind of funny, even though it's not a funny topic. They're like, what did they use, a Polaroid? Were they using something from, you know,
something worse than a
such
Polaroid,
and,
yeah.
Such and such camera from 1991? What is it? Because they're very dark.
It's really tough to make out what it was. But if you read through the police report, look, we've talked about Johnny Manziel a million times since that incident became public. And after reading what was actually in it, I think that changes things a little bit. Or it does for me, anyway.
In what way?
Well, because you get more details on what he actually, or what he was accused of saying, and you see a couple of pictures. I think it changes it for me. Because I was ready to forgive at least his football, or his personal failures, or the drug stuff and all that.
I don't care about that. It didn't change anything for me, because I'd read before that he had broken her eardrum when he smacked her in the head. And he took a plea. He didn't say I wasn't guilty. He took a plea deal to, I can't remember what it was, plead down to, but he went through his courses and completed them and all that stuff. But, yeah, you can see the bruising on her back, you know, along the spine and all that. I mean, they're not great pictures in terms of trying to really pick up what's going on. I think the ones on her back are pretty clear. But you do that, you're a coward. I'm sorry.
I already thought the story was ugly. This just made it uglier.
Yeah.
That's all. So, there you go.
Yeah, so that's not a good story. No. Not a good story. But I guess since it's all wrapped up and he completed his mandated anger management or whatever he was going through there, then these are available to be released, the details of the case.
Is that how that works?
Yeah, the pictures and all that. So there you go. There's Johnny Manziel for everybody. So hopefully he stays in Canada. All right, we're going to come back. We're going to talk with our Seahawks insider, Danny O'Neill. He's going to join us next with Bob Groz and Tom.